Thank you for listening to the EFU Market Podcast. I'm your host, Sky Cassidy. Carla Jo Helms is here with us.
Hi, guys.
And today we'll be talking about startup marketing with Ryan O'Hara. Ryan has been an early employee at several startups, helping them with marketing and prospecting tactics, including DIN or DYN. You'll correct me on that, Ryan.
It goes by DYN. Yeah, that's cool.
DYN, cool. Yeah. I've used them before. I can't even pronounce it right.
No one does.
DYN was acquired by Oracle for $600 million-plus in 2016.
Wowza.
Yep. He's also had prospecting campaigns featured for Fortune, Mashable, and The Next Web. Ryan specializes in branding, business development, prospecting, and coaching people on how to make good digital first impressions. He also mentors two accelerators, the Iron Yard and the Alpha Loft, and hosts the Prospecting Podcast. Ryan, I've listened to that podcast. You got some great guests, some great subjects on there, and we're thrilled to have you on the If You Market Podcast today.
It's exciting. It's not very often that I get asked to do the marketing podcast world, because like we're in the sales space, so everyone's always asking us to do sales stuff. But it's nice to be.
Marketing and sales go together, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Is it O'Hara or O'Hara?
O'Hara. It's the same thing.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah, good. As I was saying, I was like O'Hara, Din, Dine.
I kind of like O'Hara though. It has like a more exotic tone to it. I might go by that for now.
It sounded kind of royal when I said it. I thought, wow, that's
yeah, that's what I mean. I'm like, oh, crap.
I got to change how I'm pronouncing that. You're going to be correcting people now. It's O'Hara.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. The role. O'Hara. Yeah.
All right. So let's jump into a little about you here, how you got where you're at. I mean, I touched on it in the intro there, some of the places you've been, some of the things you've done. You do a lot in the sales space, a lot in sales coaching. Your podcast is kind of around the sales aspect. Today, we want to focus on B2B marketing. By the way, sales, marketing, all interconnected. If you guys want to hear a good podcast on sales, I've been listening to Ryan's, and he's got some great content on there, some great people talking about really good
stuff. Tell us what the name of it is again, Ryan.
Yeah, it's the Prospecting Podcast. And I wanted to kind of make... It's actually a cool thing.
Would you like to see my cat?
For the podcast listener, cat just jumped on the desk. It was cool. Random. So what I kind of think, it's actually a cool thing of starting this, but one of the things that I like to talk about with a lot of people that are doing startup marketing is like, where do you start? Because you don't have anyone. No one knows who you are. It's sad. It's lonely. You cry in the shower every night or in the morning. We shower in the morning. At least I do. I mean, I have allergies. That's what that is. Yeah, it's just no one knows your startup. And I think one of the easiest ways to kind of get people to know your startup is using old media, using people that are already around in the space. And one of the first things we did is we started a podcast at Lead IQ because no one had known who we were. We were just another weird Chrome extension in the store that no one knew about. And we were like, man, how do we get the word out that we do this stuff? And the cool part is all these people that have audiences and following in the sales space, they're always trying to get their name out there. And if you can produce free content to them, why wouldn't they do it? I mean, I'm doing the podcast with you guys. It's free content. I don't have to do any work.
And that's what the podcast is for. I think we've mentioned on here. So for the listeners, you don't feel like you're duped or anything, but we create this podcast for content. We want to be able to reach out to people and also, you know, sending out messages saying buy our stuff and listen to us isn't really what you guys want to hear. So we thought let's invite on some people who know what they're talking about to talk about marketing and create some actual value while creating content. So yeah, creating some sort of content, and the podcast medium is great for that, is great way to get your product and get your name out there and get in front of people.
You'll be surprised if you're listening to this and you're like, oh man, what should I do? I just started my startup. I'm trying to figure out how to get people to notice it. It's so easy to just crank out a podcast. Just make one once a week. So you can get someone on that has an audience. And then when you post it online, you tag that person, they share it, their audience sees it. And the other cool part is as you get more and more of these, they become reshareable. That's the other cool part. Like it's not, everyone thinks podcast episodes are like time-based, like a webinar, and they're not. Once you do a podcast, Sky, you could share this next week and then 3 weeks from now, reshare it and re-tag me. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm definitely going to reshare it again. And then my audience is getting exposed to your brand and learning about you and becoming aware of what you do.
You know, and that repurposing goes a long way when something comes up in the current news and you're like, hey, we did this 14 months ago. We were talking about this. It's still relevant today. You can always repurpose it. That's the great thing about it.
Yeah, most of the stuff is very evergreen. We had MarTech, Scott Brinker, on a podcast last year. And with MarTech conference coming up now, we just started promoting that episode again, saying, oh, hey, by the way, here's a great episode on
That was on the engagement, right? Didn't they have that was the one that they did the analytics on the engagement?
The marketing MarTech. One was just all about MarTech. Scott Brinker is kind of a MarTech, the
He's
name
the guy, MarTech. Scott's one of the guys that does that tech landscape thing, right? Doesn't he work on that every year?
Yeah, and he's got the MarTech conference that he oversees every year. Mm. You know, he's a great guy, really easygoing. He came on, talked to us all about MarTech, and I think the title of that one was Why MarTech Won't Save You, because he's saying, hey, he might be the face of MarTech, but he's saying, don't just think you're going to sign up for a MarTech app and everything's done.
Right. Like,
you need human work in there. That's where you're going to fail or succeed. But yeah, you get people to come talk to you about things and like just get started. When I started on this, if you listen back to some of the first episodes, I probably really sucked and now I only half suck. Like you get better over time.
You only half suck today.
And if you're in the B2B space, so we're talking about podcasting right now. It kind of just accidentally happened. But if you're in the B2B space, the cool part that you got to remember is it's not really about being a top 10 podcast on iTunes. It's really about getting one of the right listeners to turn in and do this. If I do a podcast episode and one person hears about it, and then eventually we prospect them and they're like, oh, I listen to your podcast. Or if I reach out to them or ask them to do something, or they see an ad, they're way more likely to convert with us if they have an experience with us or an impression. And that's a good part of this.
And it's very doable now. Speaking of MarTech, there's a lot of solutions out there for this kind of stuff. It really only takes your time and energy in actually doing it. You could listen to you could watch two old episodes of Who's the Boss or record a podcast or two, you know, which one you want to do with your time. Create it, get it out there. You do a podcast on startup marketing today. Good plug for Who's the Boss. Yeah.
Who's the Boss is getting some free shout outs here.
Their stock just went up.
another part too that I think people don't talk about is, and I've kind of subscribed to this past year. When I first joined LeadIQ, we did a ton of stuff mainly for lead gen. Like I'd go put together a webinar and hustle. I'd do some field marketing, put on an event, get a bunch of people there. And it'd be great, but you go do a webinar and you get five or six people afterward to actually turn into meetings. And then you turn maybe one or two of those into a closed customer. You just did 3 weeks worth of work to get one or two customers. It's okay. But one approach that I think works a lot better is actually we've kind of focused more on awareness this past year. And we've had a lot more success with awareness. Really focusing on just getting people to see LeadIQ everywhere that we go. Same thing we did at Dyne too. Like we tried to make sure that people always saw what we were doing. And the easiest way to do that is to do it with other people.
Yeah, build brand by putting your brand out there. And there's a lot of ways to do it.
The exposure and the consistent exposure that definitely snowballs, gets traction. That's for sure.
So Ryan, there's kind of two, as I see it. And
that leads into the next question.
Yeah. You're much more of an expert in startup marketing. I've worked in some startups, but I feel like there's two different types of startup marketing. There's the startup that's bootstrapping and needs to figure out how do they best leverage the couple thousand dollars that they're putting aside from their part-time job. And then there's the startup that has funding and they need to figure out, we have this funding, how do we best leverage, this couple $100,000 that we got from an investor to make sure that we, succeed in a time frame that the investor needs to see versus bootstrap trickling along and seeing if something can catch, kind of. Can you speak to those two different types? Am I on the right path here at all for how startup marketing works?
Yeah, I think that the funny part for me, I feel like every place I've worked, I've always had no budget. Like I go in and have a very limited budget at first. We didn't spend a marketing dollar here except for salaries probably for the first 2 years that I was here. Maybe with exception of $300 for pizza at an event buying a beer tab when you take a customer out or something. Like those are pretty much the only things that we did. Everything else was super, super bootstrap. So if you're doing a side hustle and trying to turn that into a startup and make it into a real job, I think that there's a lot of cool stuff that you can do. I'll tell you one thing that if I wished I knew this 10 years ago, and I believe in this now full heartedly. If you're in a startup, I think people get too caught up in talking about what their startup is and what the products and features are, as opposed to the real problems that people want solutions for.
I agree with you.
Yeah. And it's something that, like, they just get too preachy about what their product or service does instead of actually talking about, like, how do I make my brand bigger than my company? I care more, like, LeadIQ's brand is great. We do one thing today, but if we did 10 things tomorrow, like, who would you rather be? Would you rather be Slack or would you rather be Disney? Slack's right. Great. It's a chat app. They're valued really high, but I'm not going to lie. I'd rather be Disney any day of the week. Because they're a brand. Everything Disney touches turns into money.
Well, you know, I think when you're looking at something as a consumer, it's very different when you're looking at something as the business, you know, or the sometimes even the marketer, they forget, you know, the viewpoint of the consumer, like the client or consumer is looking at the problems. They're trying to solve stuff, right? And then you get on the other side of the equation and you're like trying to get in front of them, right? You forget to put the problem in their face.
Yeah, people put on business goggles and product goggles, and the product people get involved. And realistically, what you need to do is you need to say, man, my brand needs to transcend whatever my product is, so that tomorrow, if we have 10 products, we still can be a brand that people like.
And I guess as a startup, if you pivot, yeah, and most startups pivot, and all you did was build up these features that now are thrown out the next day for a pivot, then you lost everything you were working on versus building a brand around this general idea or concept.
Yeah. And LeadIQ, for example, I'm not trying to plug my company. I'm just talking about the brand. We literally have our own personality for it. It's its own person. It's got its own personality. We did brand archetyping for it. Do you guys, do your listeners know what that is, or should I explain what that is?
You should explain
some that. Do, some don't, but you can explain. Yeah. I think we've had an episode on it before, but yeah, please.
Yeah, so brand archetyping is basically, there's a framework where people like to understand and categorize things that they process in their daily life. And we process these things because we relate to all of them. So good examples. Sometimes I want to feel like a badass. Sometimes I want to feel like a magician that makes dreams come true. Sometimes I want to feel like a sage. I want to be the smartest person in the room. Sometimes I want to be a gesture. Your brand should pick one of these archetypes and commit to it with everything that you do. Content-wise, the way you position your product, the way you talk about it on the website, the way you prospect, the way you cold call, everything. You stem from all this. It's a compass that guides you on how to communicate and talk with your brand.
So don't have a schizophrenic multiple personality disorder brand, kind of.
Yeah, I hate when I see companies that are really serious put out a fun video in quotes. It's like wearing flair in Office Space.
Right.
like instead, just what you should do is just have personality all the time. Like,
yeah.
if you're being stiff and serious. And the secret is, if you're a startup, pick a brand archetype no one's doing. Like, I looked at our space, for example, and we're kind of bunched in with these data providers in the sales space. All these companies are stale and kind of boring with the way that they do marketing. If you lined them up in a row and said, and gave them all the same logo and changed the text, you wouldn't tell the difference between them. But if you actually look at us and our content and stuff, we have our own life and personality in the content that we produce and the way that we communicate stuff. And that's because we use brand archetyping. The brand archetype we pick is a gesture. So we try to make people laugh. We try to entertain them. We worry about that stuff a lot more than making money off of you. And then when you like us and you feel an attraction to us, you're more likely to dig in deeper and check out the details later on your own.
And then people will remember, I guess it's easier to remember also. So how deep does this brand architecture go? Like, does your brand have a favorite type of pizza?
We haven't gone that detailed, but like, let's just put it this way.
Should have just said ham and pineapple.
You know what? I'm on the fence about Hawaiian pizza. I like both, but I don't know. But let the record show though that we put everything through a filter. So if we make a landing page, for example, for a campaign we're doing, I might make a landing page that's exactly what I want to say. And then the next iteration is, okay, let's put it through the gesture archetype now. How do we make this copy more fun? How do we make
character would crack a joke here, would use this turn of phrase instead, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, like we have one of the things that our app does is it helps people with like finding email addresses and stuff. And we literally wrote in one of our like landing pages, instead of saying find anyone's email, the landing page said, are you a wizard? And then it made a joke about like what you're, you can't guess emails. You have to figure out a way to do it. And we'll do little yeah. stuff like that. We'll try and find little bits in the pieces of content. I'm actually evolving the concept so much more now where we're now literally scripting fiction for some of our talking head videos that we do where we're giving advice on stuff. Like we script things ahead of time and think about like, there's a guy here on my content team, his name's Rishi, who is a stand-up comic in New York, and he's living here for 90 days. I'm teaching him how to video edit, audio edit, write, blog, all that stuff. I'm teaching him everything. And then he's going to basically help me with like fitting into our archetype.
And that's sort of, cool.
Yeah, that's the way that's it should be. Cool. Like if yeah. you're a brand that wants to be a sage brand or an explorer brand, you want to try experiments, go hire someone that has a background in science. Yeah. If you want to be a brand that is an explorer brand, go hire someone that travels, doesn't likes to travel a lot of places and stuff. Like you can fit things that fit everyone's interest. But here's the cool part. Every person on this call right now, we're all these things. There's different times where I'm like, where I want to be like, I want to stick it to the man. That's a rebel archetype. And all your customers want to stick it to the man sometimes. Like Harley Davidson, literally Harley Davidson has a whole business model off this. The reason there's a lifestyle around Harley and there isn't around Honda bikes or BMW bikes is because Harley has a brand.
Not a lot of Honda tattoos on people's arms.
Yeah. When was the last time you saw a Honda tattoo? And you know what? I have a Honda moped and I don't have I love it. I have a Ruckus. I drive it.
I drove a motorcycle back in the day. I drove a Honda and I remember I was out one night and I pulled up. It was probably a bar. I was going somewhere. So let's say I pulled up at this bar and I parked my motorcycle out front. There was a bunch of motorcycles parked and there was some people standing there and they looked at me and they're like, what are you doing? The motorcycles parked there were all Harleys. And they're like, you don't park your Honda here. They wouldn't let me park my bike there. And I was like, okay, I know better. I'm not going to just walk away because I'm going to come back to no bike or something. But
it's so funny that startups
story about their brand.
Startups don't think about this. Like you want to build a Harley. What if your company actually makes it and you're not one of the five?
That's a great tag. What if your company makes it?
Do you want to be stuck with some garbage brand that's all about features and bullet points and stuff? That stuff's boring. Like I know it's funny. If you read all these startup blogs, you're like, oh, don't focus on your first hire being a branding person. And I couldn't disagree with you more. I think that a branding person should be able to get in the weeds and do some of the cool, like, tactical stuff too and execute. But they should be mindful of what kind of company you want to build.
I also think a lot of really successful startups, when you look at who their first – forget about the first hire. They might be successful not because they hired a branding person earlier, but because one of their founders was a branding genius. Like they were really good at branding and they focused on that and they may not have even known it, but they really cared about the brand and put a lot of attention.
Or one of the founders had a really strong personality that, he made sure was emulated because that's successful too. You know, you have thought leaders that, have a strong personality. That's one of the reasons why they are thought leaders.
Look at someone like Richard Branson, for example, right? Richard Branson's constantly known for being a rule breaker and his company and their board meetings are not allowed to wear ties. Like there's like rules that he sets and he publicly brags about this stuff because that's part of his brand. I've been actually talking a lot about this with sales reps saying like, hey, when you're online doing social selling, you should be building your own brand. But like, by the way, that's something else you should do too. Make every one of your employees a face of your company. And if they like on the business side, I get so annoyed when I go to the companies and I'm like, I'll talk to their marketing teams and say, hey, you really should be putting your sales reps front and center, making them in your content, have them do stuff, have them run webinars and stuff. You know what they say? Marketers like, oh, I don't trust them. And I'm like, you trust them talking to your customers and closing $1 million deals, but you don't trust them talking to 1,000 customers. Don't hire them in the first place.
Don't you think that's just the age old problem between marketing and sales? I mean, it's like, marketing versus sales, right?
They'll get better over time too. Sure, the first time they're in front of an audience, they might not be, super smooth. But who is?
Right.
Put people out there. Let them.
Well, I have some that would love that.
Yeah, they want to
do that.
It's honestly a great thing because it shows that you want to invest in your talent, and it also gets it so that you can cherry pick some stuff too. But like we have everybody here produce content. It's literally I have. Time blocked off on our calendar where we try and film, we'll go film a bunch of stuff with them for like 30 minutes, one for a week. And then we'll have content for the next 5 months with them in it. And we'll put out little bits of videos. They post it natively and ask people to contact them. They post a video. It has our logo and we have our little marketing polish on it. They come to our site. We cookie them. We retarget them. We bug them. And the other cool part is all these people that these reps are prospecting, we upload into custom audience sets and then run targeted ads with their content in it. So when Jeremy on our team is writing an email to John Smith at Acme, John Smith at Acme is seeing Jeremy's face on his LinkedIn and on his Facebook and on his Twitter on paid social. And that's the cycle of how you get true alignment, is you use that talent to try and tap that in.
That's really smart.
Yeah, it's
really smart.
You mentioned something earlier that I wanted to jump back to really quick. You mentioned hiring a comedian on your marketing team. And I've always wondered why companies that wanted a more friendly, fun brand didn't hire comedians for their copywriting. Most of the comedians aren't doing anything anyway. they'd love to have a couple extra bucks here and there. They're probably inexpensive. And I mean, when it comes to copywriting, that's kind of all they do, is make copy that can come across smoothly to people. And I mean, crack a joke in there, great. Hiring a comedian as a copywriter, I love that idea.
How about a rebel comedian? I like that.
You have someone
there's all brands of comedians. There's all kinds.
Awesome. Such a great idea.
A possible comedian.
Look at the face. Like I was watching, I love watching Conan O'Brien. Like I watch a lot of his stuff to get ideas for marketing here. Like what there's Alan Gannett from, I don't know what the company he's working for now, but he wrote a book and it's basically about like how these people become good content creators. And one of the things that he says is he went and found all these people that make great content, they consume content. So I've been like really trying to go, like when I have extra time, I try and find things to watch. And I've been watching a lot of Conan and catching up on old clips and watching them on YouTube. And one of the things that I noticed with Conan is that he doesn't ever break, but he's actually, if you watch him in interviews when he's not Conan on the show and stuff, he's actually sort of playing an exaggerated version of himself. So we're actually doing that here now. Like I'm trying to get away from just making content and kind of make more infotainment. Like did you guys watch The Office when it was on NBC?
Of course.
I've been watching it lately, just at random. It started popping up in like a YouTube feed of mine, and I love it. I never watched it that much.
I think I've watched it twice all the way through.
Oh my God, it's good.
So marketers that are listening right now, how much would you have paid if they weren't selling Dunder Mifflin, but they were selling your product or service or your startup? I would have paid millions of dollars. I probably would have, if I had the money, I would have covered the production cost in this the entire budget and just released the same thing that they did every week. Some of the stuff's controversial. There's an episode where Michael accidentally outs an employee and then tries to kiss him, like to make him show that he's like tolerant of people. Like there's stuff that happens that's inappropriate that you can control, but no one's going back and holding torches and complaining at Dunder Mifflin, a fictional paper company. And no one's going to NBC and burning down the doors and yelling at them for producing a show that did that. That's where I think the future of marketing is heading too, is like, can I find a way to entertain my customer? Remember, these people that you're going after, they're going to sign contracts and do stuff with you. Their lives are busy. You're interrupting them. Give them an escape. Like that's part of this
it's
that I think
true. People, it's really like the new infotainment, isn't it?
Marketing is going back to where it started. We're making Lone Ranger episodes to sell our soap again.
Yeah. I mean, they used to fully integrated fiction put in, and that's actually what we're doing this year too. So like we're trying to every week, we're no longer writing videos and making videos where I'm just talking and saying something. A lot of the time it's a bit. We're writing a bit and then we're feeding a lesson into it.
That's awesome.
That's very cool.
So that sounds like it's advanced for a lot of startup marketing. So to get back to the startup marketing, let's do some nuts and bolts for startup people.
Yeah, how'd you get there?
They got a startup and they're not a marketing person. Where should they start? What things should they have in place? Where should they put their efforts?
Yeah, so I think the easiest thing to do is audio and video. Just grab a Zoom like we're doing right now. Use whatever software you want. Go reach out to prospects and ask them to do something with you. People will surprisingly say yes. When they say yes, make something really easy to do. Block off 15 minutes and do a rapid fire question thing. Put on the site, post it on social, tag that person. When that person shares that thing, when people comment and like on it, go after those people as prospects. And if they aren't interested, ask them to be on your podcast. Ask them to do the thing that you want to do. And well, this is what I did at Lead IQ for literally 2 years before people started noticing us. And I did it without spending much money. We were getting the product ready and trying to make it better and better and figure out some things. And before long, we put ourselves in a position where, like, I joked about this the other day, but our biggest competitor, DiscoverOrg, bought a company called ZoomInfo.
That's big, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge. Zoom and DiscoverOrg were 1 and 2 in our market. We joke that we're now in second place because they're one company. And oh, yeah. We made a video about it as a joke, like where everyone's dancing and celebrating it as a joke. But like, we got like a ton of meetings from that. I posted that and a bunch of direct messages were like, oh, we didn't know you competed with them. Let's talk. And that like, that's where it sort of starts to happen a little bit. If you're a startup founder and you're trying to kick off your startup, what I recommend is get your prospects involved in the stuff that you do. Don't do it by yourself because no one's going to see it.
Nice. We're in the same space, and we started saying around here immediately, wow, one less competitor. One of our top competitors is gone now.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, oh no, look what happened. Oh no, they're making this giant. No, no, it's one less competitor. That's great.
And you know, Ryan, that is super simple. It's great advice. And you said you did it 2 years before it really started to gain traction. And
it did get traction. Like, it would get traction. But the thing is, we went from getting 1 or 2 meetings every time I do something to now getting thousands of people coming to our site because they've heard of us.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
If you don't give up on it and you do it long enough, people will start to notice. I know he's polarizing and stuff, but like, it reminds me of, there's a Gary Vaynerchuk. I'm not a follower of his, like I know a lot of people in the sales.
When people mention him, they either have to say, I love him or I don't follow him. He's not my favorite.
No, I don't want people to, like, if you saw our style.
Brand.
Yeah, we're very different styles, but like, if you look at the stuff that he puts out, he put a video out where he shared, it's like over the top, but like all these salespeople share it. It's like about not giving up. They showed him posting on YouTube 500 straight days of wine reviews, where it's just him on YouTube drinking wine. He probably has a drinking problem if he's doing that. but the video's showing, like, it's showing him drinking it, and it shows the view count on the videos, and they're all like 100, 120, 130, 140. And it literally just kept going. To the point where people start to actually notice what he's doing. And now he's got like a crazy cult following.
It's true. Now, what did you do when you did, like, say for instance, 15 minutes and you did it every day or every week or a couple times, what would you riff on? What topic would you pick? What would you do?
Yeah. So a lot of the time I would get inspired by something that I'd see someone do. So like a big thing I'd recommend if you're a startup founder is maybe start your day off. If you're trying to come up with some content stuff, block off time on your calendar for 10 minutes just to look at what's going on LinkedIn. Like, see what people are writing and talking about. And what will happen is I'll see a post and I'll message a person. And I never automate anything. Everything's always super personalized. I just say, hey, saw you said this about this. Would like to talk about that for a little bit. Could we do a podcast or something? And before long, I had people. First off, very few people will say no. You'll get people that will respond back and say they're really busy. Let's do it in a couple months, and I'll actually follow up with them. I've had like some pretty good people that I have in my pipeline that I can tap at any time to do something with. And I'm like kind of saving it for like the right topic. But like in the early days, that's what I do. I just would say, could you hop on and we could do something really quick. People don't say no.
People like to talk.
Yeah, look at, like, we all know about Richard Branson. Everybody knows about Steve Jobs, obviously, when what he did at Apple and stuff. Like, I know it's cliche to talk about him, but, like, everybody knew who he was. If you saw him at a grocery store, you'd be like, holy crap, it's Steve Jobs.
But he was really focused on the brand.
Right, and that's the thing.
Which is why we keep talking about him. He was focused.
You mentioned him in a grocery store. I just picture him standing in the meat aisle just looking at meat.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that.
Like, just smelling it and then moving.
Was he a meat eater or was he vegetarian?
No, very much not.
He was famously, apparently before he died, he only ate fruit.
Yeah.
So, but
part of the problem for his demise was they couldn't get protein into his system.
That's what I heard. Yeah, yeah.
He hadn't eaten meat in so long.
Everyone knows who he is because he put himself with his company and it became the face of his brand.
Yeah.
If you're a developer that's starting a startup and you don't want to do that, go get someone that will. Like, You can be the secret CTO that doesn't talk. Like for me, for example, I've kind of unintentionally become the face of Weed IQ for stuff, but like our CEO is great. When she's in panels, her name's May. She's awesome. But May's kind of, she likes getting in the business stuff. She's not completely comfortable always being the face of everything. So like, I kind of do that for her, and we have a great dynamic. When she does do it, it's even better, because it's like, whoa, it's the wizard behind the curtain. But you like, if you're uncomfortable doing that, maybe you should get someone to help you out. Like, it's not too hard. There are people out there that are dying to just go get a comedian, go get a person, like go get someone that maybe has worked in sales, marketing. Yeah. If you're a marketer and you want to do head down stuff, you're going to probably like, it's fine, but you should have someone that wants to be out there and do this stuff.
So I know we're getting into sales here because this is marketing, but I know people on our podcast are going to ask this question. I'm a startup. I do this. People are liking, how do I prospect for them? Why do you, you know, you go, yeah.
This could be a whole podcast. And it's, oh, wait, it
well,
is.
Well, just give us a tip because I know that's what
this is your podcast. I've heard this on your podcast, and I'd say you just have to ask.
Yeah, so here's the framework.
I do that here. I don't ask people. I'm like, I'll have them on the podcast, and then maybe down the road some point we'll follow up and ask, but I don't want to be salesy. It's like, no, you have a product. You want them to know about it. Just ask them.
Here's my basic guideline if you're listening. There are four questions every activity you do, whether it's a cold call, cold email, or social, should do. You need to answer these four questions. Why are you contacting me? That basically is what made me notice you. I saw on LinkedIn you posted about this. Was curious if you'd want to talk if you're doing the podcast pitch. If you're pitching your product, I saw on LinkedIn that you wrote about this. My product's trying to fix this. Like, you need something that's personalized about them on that end. How am I special to you? So your activity needs to answer that question too. You're not proving to the person, my product's amazing. Check out my product. You really should use it. You're proving that you handpicked them and you're stopping your busy day to reach out to them because they're really important to you and they're really special to you. It should, when you're doing that, it's like you're a GM of a sports team trying to recruit the person to sign with your team. Like, that's the way it should be viewed. And then the third part is, who are you? This is the biggest mistake. So many startup founders will go make an email where the bulk of the email is who they are. They introduce themselves. They talk about their company. Bullet point. Value prop. Can we get a meeting? Can we get 50 minutes of chat? Hell no. I'm not going to look at that. Like, instead, one sentence. We are trying to help people with XYZ. Wanted to see if you want to talk about this. And then the last question that your cold email or cold call or whatever activity you're doing should be, what do you want me to do with this? So many people leave a call to action out. Like, they don't talk about, like, are you asking for a meeting? You asked me to check out for the site. You can only do one. You can't do both. I see startup founders would be like, I'd like to check out and get your mind on, like, figure out what you think of my product. We're helping people with XYZ. Book 15 minutes of my calendar, check out my website, email my mom. Like, they'll just list a bunch of things that, like,
you want the person to do. Anything you want. I'll come to your house. Just tell
me. Yeah. And this tip's not one of the four questions, but end your email or your phone call with an open-ended question. If you say, end with a yes or no question, you don't get an objection. You'll get no equals no response. Yes equals yes, I'm interested, and you're leaving it to luck.
You have an open-ended question, right? Yes or no. That's the same thing we do with the media. We apply sales and marketing tactics with the media. You never lead in with who your client is or whatever. You lead in with the problem. You lead in with the issue. By the time they get down to the bottom, you've hooked them through a series of hooks that they're like, who the hell are you? Who the hell is the client, right? What you're saying is just, it's so common sense that I kind of go, God, this is a great, like, refresher.
Yeah. One other thing too, I was going to say, you'll run into an issue too, where people will prospect a company, but all right, we're all in startups here. We all care about our companies. You got to remember, the average person changes jobs once every 18 months. They don't care about their job. A lot of the people that you prospect. So you need to talk about them individually. Look at it, go on LinkedIn, go look at the CEO of X or CFO of X company. CFOs churn a lot, by the way. Like, they usually stay at a place for a year, then go somewhere else.
Probably half of our guests, when I first reach out to them to when they record and air, are at a different company.
Yeah. And that's because they you hit a wall where you're like, I'm doing the same thing over and over again. The whole job industry has changed. Like, people change jobs a lot more frequently. And what that means is that you need to, when you prospect someone, need to appeal to them as a human, not their company. They are not their company. The days of having someone and their identity being made by that their company is kind of non-existent anymore, except for the early like I've been at Lead IQ since like very, very early. So like for me, it's a big part of me. But when you're someone that moves around jobs a lot, that's like you got to appeal to them individually.
Yeah, you mentioned sports earlier. You mentioned like a general manager. It is a lot like sports people used to, they'd join a team and they'd be on that team for life. Every once in a while, somebody get traded. It's a big deal. Now everybody's a free agent every other year. Most people are moving.
Yeah, it's even affected that industry.
Like look at the NBA, for example. Like all these people will go, all these players will get max contracts, but they get 1 year opt-outs all the time.
Yeah, everybody's constantly looking to move in sports, on the job, everywhere.
Yeah.
All right, we touched on quite a bit here. I want to take a quick break. After the break, we'll get back to kind of more startup marketing, maybe go into some specific channels and whatnot. So just think about that for a minute, Ryan, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Hi, it's Bill Cates. I'm president of Referral Coach International. And the shortest line to relevance, to getting someone's attention, is a recommendation from someone else they already trust. We help you multiply your best clients and reach those hard to reach clients. So reach out to us at referralcoach.com/resources. Referralcoach.com/resources. Let's start a conversation. See if I can help.
Hey, this is Sky Cassidy. Welcome back to the If You Market podcast. I've got Carla Jo Helms, our co-host here with us, and Ryan O'Hara. We decided we're going to pronounce it.
O'Hara. It sounds Scottish when you do that. Right? O'Hara. Get some macaroons.
You're the VP of marketing over there at Lead IQ, but you talk a lot about sales. Did I get something wrong here?
No, it's just, you know what it is? I started in sales. I wanted to work in marketing. I graduated from school in 2008 when the recession hit, and all the entry-level marketing jobs were getting scooped up by people that were more senior that had to come back down to like take a job and get through stuff. So I got my start at Dyne as the first business development rep that they ever hired. And my job was to prospect. I did outbound straight up. First couple of months that I worked there, I sent crap. I was really bad at prospecting. I did this thing where like I was that shy college kid that like would look at what the other reps were sending and be like, I better duplicate that and do that. And then about a month into the job, the chief revenue officer at Dyne, now he's like a GM at Oracle, but Kyle Yorkie sat me down and said, hey, I hired you to be Ryan. I didn't hire you to be Josh or Brian. No disrespect to those guys. Those guys are cool too, but they're better closers anyway. But he basically said that and it opened up my world. I just kind of treated my BDR job like a marketing job, except I was doing marketing for one account at a time.
You took on your personality instead of trying to just co-opt everybody else, like you're talking
about.
Yeah,
and I learned so much doing it. And the cool part is I did that stuff and it worked so well that they actually ended up moving me over to marketing. But since
you wanted to be anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and the other cool part, they actually had me train the sales team. So like I would do about, I got a session that I do on prospecting with them. I got 4 hours for every new hire. And then come in, we do them in waves once a month. And I'd show them how to write emails. I'd show them how the tech works, all that stuff. And I just learned a ton from it. But it ended up getting me ingrained all this useless crap about sales. And when I moved back into marketing and then eventually I went to another startup where I was a CMO at, and then worked in another company where I was a CMO. Like I basically got stuck in these positions where I had all this useless crap about prospecting, but nowhere to tell anyone about it. So I just started doing side blogs about it. And then it eventually led to the CTO of Lead IQ, Angela Huang, messaged me after I wrote a blog post on how to find people's email addresses. And it led to us talking. And then when they were actually hiring for a position, I saw an angel list. I was like, I know that guy. And I applied and talked to him. And the rest kind of happened from there.
That's awesome. I find different companies are structured different, and that's fine. But in our company, I always say that marketing works for sales. So it makes sense. Some companies have the exact opposite philosophy. You know, that marketing does not work for sales. And some, you know, they're side by side and they collaborate. But in our company, anyway, I find it much more successful when marketing takes the attitude that they work for sales. And their job, you know, if sales guy needs a cup of coffee to close a deal, the marketing guy should run and get it for him. Maybe not to that extreme. That's really a sales manager's job to get coffee. But
it does its point. I mean, you really got your hands wet, like working from the back end. I mean, marketing's job is to facilitate, to help sales close. And you started from the very end and worked your way back, right?
Yeah, I think, well, I think the part that I really learned was like, I realized, oh, there's a couple things I wanted to talk about with this. All right. What do you
probably invest? Developed your own philosophy based off of this.
Yeah, I know I guess I'll go into it a little bit. I have two things I want to talk about from a philosophical standpoint. The first is, let me ask you guys, do either of you ever make landing pages or make websites or write copy and stuff?
Sure.
Yeah, I do some of that here.
So as a startup founder, if you go and do that stuff, you have to like write things and figure that out. What takes more time? Going to a designer and saying, hey, I'm going to market the site this way. I want to put this messaging here. I'm going to spend a couple $1,000s on Google Ads to get people to come to the site. Let's watch and see if people convert, and I'll know if this is good messaging or not. That's like the typical route a startup founder does. The way I look at it is, I look at it as like, oh, wow, I can actually like use prospecting to test messaging first before I go put it on a website. And that's a really easy way to go figure this stuff out. So when I was at LeadIQ, for example, the first 6 or 7 months, I thought that people were going to buy LeadIQ because we'd help you get the contact information that you want.
Right.
I couldn't have been more wrong. Contact information is a commodity. Like, people either have good data or bad data. If not, they buy data from people. Like, that's basically the framework of this. What I learned was the reason people were getting LeadIQ was for the workflow of being able to get that information into the different tools that they use. I would have never learned it if I didn't prospect.
So philosophically, you're saying marketing should go sit down with sales and find out what the front lines are really experiencing.
Yeah.
And then compare it.
You can get more feedback from doing 5 or 6 cold calls or writing 100 emails and getting, you know, 20 or 30 responses if you follow the thing we said earlier in the podcast on how to write a cold email. but if you write and are very careful and go through, you'll get every objection. So you know what bullets you have to beat when you put your stuff on your webpage. You know what value prop is working the best because you'll see what your response rate. And you'll also learn what other things you need to address on your web copy. And it's way easier to write a cold email than it is to go design a web page.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of little things you don't have to deal with there. You can just try different content out, send it out, call people. So yeah, I guess that's kind of,
if you're a founder, block off an hour of your calendar every week, you should try and write one cold email every 10 minutes. And if you have time, see if you can sneak in some follow-up cold calls in there. But do that once a week until you have traction. And when you have traction, you kind of have a good idea of what you should put on your website.
So that's a little bit of an advantage.
So the three points were every objection, value props, and what was the third one?
The third point is, it's kind of honestly, it's not professional, but like various crap that comes up. Like you'll just learn stuff. No, you'll just learn stuff like, oh, I never thought of using my product that way.
Right.
I didn't realize that people were going to use LeadIQ because they were tired of doing copying and pasting. I thought people were going to get LeadIQ to get information. And
yeah.
Copying and pasting is what they really hate. Not to plug my product. Swear to God, I'm not trying to do that.
That's perfectly fine. It's relevant here. That's
philosophic point number one.
So my second philosophy, and this good, I love these. You guys are queuing these up amazingly. This is like professional.
We're so proud.
I'm like, you can't see because it's podcast world, but we're all blushing. Okay. The other thing that I've learned from doing other startups and what worked at Dyn and what didn't is startups are really about little wins every day. Everyone if you're in the West Coast, especially, there's this toxic Silicon Valley mentality that like, I'm going to try something and it's going to scale and I'm going to get millions of customers and I'm going to be shredding guitar and sitting on my VC funding and all that.
It's like, not the reality, right?
It's not really how it is. If you want your startup to be good and you want to do well, you need little wins every day. There's 220 business days in the work year. You probably work, if you're a startup, you're probably working 50 or 60 hours a week on it. All you need is one little win every day. It's like chipping away in a forest with a hatchet. If you do that,
really, really profound.
It's stupid, but it's so smart.
It's
right?
Stupid smart.
Yeah. I'm saying if you want to be a sexy startup and have that do that fun stuff, do that on those other days that aren't work days.
I live in New Hampshire and I work for a Silicon Valley company, and working with the founders here, they've embraced this and it's been so much better for us. We've seen competitors blow all their funding and go under. We've seen companies try and do home run growth hacky things and get shut down or sued. We've seen companies that burn their funding and overhire, and then they're like, oh, I don't get why we're out of money. We've just been very, very careful to like try and figure out a way to get little wins every day.
If I get it's really incremental, right? It's like things grow in gradients. It's no, that's why there's no silver bullet. There's no get rich quick scheme. In the reality of it, maybe it's a natural law, kind of like gravity.
Try and have one. If you're a startup founder, try and have one win a day. And when you hire a new employee, say your goal is to have one win a day. And if you feel good about those wins, your 220 wins will turn into 440 wins. And your 440 wins will turn into 880 wins.
No.
I was panicking that I did the math wrong. But think of it.
You could do the 80-20 rule on that, right? You could.
Yeah, each person. Yeah, I just kept going up by two, or squaring it. Each person out there, though, that is going out and doing this stuff, you want to hire people that think like this. And I think the startups that I always talk to that do well are the ones that do this. Little wins. You close a big account that day, great. That's one little win. You got a good response from a prospect or you got a good inbound lead from your marketing page, great. That's a little win.
Wowed a client.
Yeah. You got a referral. Yep. Holy crap. Someone didn't just use your product. They used your product and liked it so much that they're telling other people about it. That's a little win.
Yeah, the right person accepted your connection on LinkedIn, whatever it is, just getting something done every day and it builds up instead of trying to hit that home run.
You don't need the scaling part. And in my opinion, I don't think the whole scaling part, you don't really need it until you get to an A round.
And having your company be scalable is different than thinking it's going to immediately scale. Because like you said, people try to scale and they're like, great, here's how we're going to scale. Now let's go hire 50 people. And then a month later, they're like, oh, yeah, I mean, we made ourselves scalable. And we hired all the people to scale, but we didn't really have this thing figured out called selling it and marketing it. We figured that would happen because we had this cool idea and it was just supposed to happen. And you're like, no, do this.
Yeah, it's the stupidest thing, but listen, I'm serious. If you're going to listen to anything from this podcast and be on it, that's the biggest thing I've learned, that I now have like super awareness of the startup. Like, I feel like I can go to my next startup and do the same thing. And my next startup after that, like, I'm just going to focus on little wins. And I did that here. And it's like the stupidest little thing that's changed. Like, guys, it sounds dumb. It's a win to me today that I'm on a podcast with you guys. It sounds dumb, but like, all I need is
one person. That's insulting.
No. If I have one person that comes and like says, hey, I listened to your conversation, it was meaningful to me, and I kind of want to check out what you guys do, or I want to follow you and see stuff. I just got one person that's going to amplify things to their network over and over again for me for the next couple of years.
Yeah. And again, I would say, listen to Ryan's podcast. He's got some great stuff on there. I intended to listen to an episode to be prepped for this a bit. And then I've ended up just subscribing and have it on my,
sales team listen to it.
Cool. Oh, yeah. Cool.
As you can tell here, Ryan knows what he's talking about.
I appreciate it.
Let's jump over a little bit here, Ryan, to another subject. I want to get through as many things as possible. I know we have a long podcast compared to other ones out there, but we still always run out of time.
I think we've got like 5 more minutes, right?
Oh yeah, we have time still. There's just a lot I want to try to get through with Ryan. So let's first hit general advice for marketing, startup marketing. Anything we haven't hit on yet that you want marketers to know? Pitfalls, do's and don'ts.
Or even a recap.
Okay. I'll start with one other thing that people do. If you're in the B2B world, you don't have to be serious. That's another thing.
But business is serious, Ryan. Come on.
I know.
You want to be a rebel comedian.
You should do it. Do it then.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I sorry, by the way, it's just starting to snow here, so everyone's leaving the office. I'm good.
Wait, are they fleeing the office? Are they going outside to see the snow, or are they rushing home before
they're rushing home before the roads get bad. Yeah. So for me, hopefully you can cut that out or whatever, but for me, the way I look at it, I think that everyone's too busy. They're too polished. They're too professional. You got to talk like a human being because you're talking to people that are human. And that's how we approach everything here. I hate going to a landing page and not understanding what a company does at all. Like, that's the worst thing. I hate going on a LinkedIn profile and reading what the person does for a living and not understanding their job at all.
So we got to get rid of gobbledygook in B2B. And yeah, a lot of jargon that you read it and you're like, what did I just read? What do you do? Yes.
Yeah. So I always tell people, if your elevator pitch says, what do? I help your company multiply its sales and increase, you know, reduce turnover and increase overall success. I say, great. Now I still have no freaking clue what you do. Can you tell me what you actually do? I don't need your vague, I make you feel good about yourself description of your company.
Okay. So B2B, don't be serious.
Don't be serious. If you want to, if there's a giant opportunity out there right now to stand out, if you're not serious. And the companies that don't care about formalities and that are doing well that you see crushing it right now, like look at Drift, for example. Like a lot of people are buying and using Drift. Drift came out in 2014. They compete with Intercom. Intercom came out in 2011. Both are great companies and great products. We've used both. I like both companies. But Drift is literally catching up to Intercom. And a lot of what they do is focus on informalities. They have all their employees post LinkedIn videos once a week. They do what they call LinkedIn takeovers, where they get everyone to do that. They make landing pages with fun copy and stuff. They're not too like buzzwordy with stuff. But I'm not accusing Intercom of that, by the way. I'm just saying there are lots of other chat apps that have tried to dethrone Intercom and haven't been able to do it because they're too formal. I like calling them khaki wearers, like people that wear khakis and have cell phone clips. That's what I picture when I read half the web copy.
As soon as a company gets big enough to have a legal department, they just lose all ability to, you know, like you said, not be so serious.
I will go down swinging here at LeadIQ. If we become a bigger company, I will go down swinging trying to make sure our brand stays fun.
You should do it in a rebel comedian way too.
Yeah, I'm going to do skids on my bike and put sheet boxes and make music start. I'm feeling it.
So you're saying hire a comedian, not a lawyer.
Yeah, or a comedian lawyer.
A comedic lawyer.
Get a comedic lawyer. That's funny.
Most expensive comedian ever.
Yeah, yeah. But it doesn't have to be a comedian either. Just have fun with it. Ask yourself if the person reading this. All right, here's a good litmus test. Whatever you put out there, ask yourself if your mom would print it out and put it on the fridge. And if your mom wouldn't, it's probably not worth showing people. Ask if your friend would look at it and say, I like this company. I like this person. Ignoring what you do, because remember, your brand has a different identity than your product too.
Well, it's a great way to really hone in on those that are going to go after you and really weed out the ones that you don't want to do business with, I think.
Yeah, you say you were saying you're just leading to it, and it pops in my head back to something you said earlier. Your brand can be different from your product. So your product can be serious. Richard Branson is the cool billionaire kind of, but you know, he makes planes and they aren't silly. They have to stay in the air. You know, they can't have silly space technology.
I hate to reference this because I think a lot of their ads are annoying because you see them so much, but look at Geico. Are car accidents funny?
Yeah.
Have either of you ever been in a car accident? It's terrifying.
We brought this up the other week. The insurance company.
Yeah, we do. I have to say Geico though, bringing the best of the best Geico back.
That's brilliant.
It's so brilliant, but it's true.
But
insurance companies in general have the best ads right now. They're all comedic.
They're so commoditized though.
Guys, I'll tell you a problem with it. If you're using the brand archetype formation though, it's hard to differentiate between them because I agree.
We were just saying that.
But if you look, the first, apparently I did research on this when I was learning about brand archetypes originally. Aflac was actually one of the first companies to do the comedic thing. They had the duck talking and saying Aflac over and over again. Mm-hmm. They did that in the 70s. Geico had a huge government contract.
Yeah, they did.
Literally, Geico stands for Government Employment Insurance Corporation.
Exactly. Yes. So
they literally were selling to the government and they lost that contract because a lot of people got laid off when the Cold War stuff ended. And they were like, we need a new national campaign to expand. They somehow came up with this idea. They're like, hey, Aflac's doing funny stuff. Why don't we start doing funny stuff? And then that works. So all these other companies are like, let's get Stephanie Courtney, who's the face of Progressive. She plays Flo. She was a comedian at the Upright Citizens Brigade in New York for 10 years. Let's get her to be the face of our company. Let's get Dean Winters to be Mayhem, and I can't remember the insurance company that they.
Yeah. Well, see, I can't either.
Maybe something like that. Yeah. They all do great job now. I mean, they all have good comedic stuff.
Serious, funny, funny ads. Yeah, funny brand.
State Farm is serious.
Yeah, funny brand, serious product. And if you like, by the way, if I started an insurance company right now, I would be serious. I would not be funny because too many of them are doing it.
You'd have to be the opposite, right?
You got
to
zig. You got to zig where other people are zagging.
We had a guest on a while back, and I think the quote that she put out there was, "Your product is boring. Your marketing doesn't have to be." Like, right. Oh yeah, that's your opportunity to do something not boring. Sure, your product and the example you mentioned, The Office. I think I brought this up on the podcast before. I use them as an example all the time. I ask people, The Office is a show about selling, right? That's what they do. They sell in there. What do they sell? And everybody, even people I ask that are big fans, are like, what do they sell? I don't know. They're never actually selling. And I say, I know because I pay attention to sales movies and sales shows. Paper. They chose the most boring product possible because it had nothing to do. The show is super entertaining, has nothing to do with the product, and yet it can be super entertaining.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, look at what they do on 30 Rock, too. Like when 30 Rock was on the air, they literally removed the fourth wall and make fun of the network that they're on.
Yeah.
I pay attention to that stuff. That's the stuff I like, is like the little business jokes about, like, they make a joke that a wig company owns NBC. Shineheart Wigs. It's just really brilliant and different. So that's the idea, is like, can you find a way to make it so that when you're going out there and going to the market, your brand has a personality? One last thing, I'll give you an example to sell you on this idea of personality. Have you guys seen all the Star Wars movies? Most of the startup founders probably have seen at least the original trilogy.
You can't be a startup founder if you're not a follower of Star Wars.
Better than the later ones, I will say.
Yeah, so like no one likes the prequels. You want to know why no one likes the prequels? Because
they're
overdone. Well, it's not just that. There's more.
Right?
There's
overdone. More. Tell us.
If you watch the original trilogy, Han Solo is a rebel. He's a badass. Luke is a hero. He is a hero archetype. He is all about trying to represent, like, you know, being heroic and doing the right thing. Leia is the comic relief. She's the gesture. She makes you laugh. She has wise cracks, all that stuff. The sage is Obi-Wan Kenobi. When they went and made the prequels, I can't tell you what Qui-Gon Jinn's supposed to be, Liam Neeson's character. He's boring. There's no adjectives to write down for him. Literally, you could replace him with a piece of sandpaper, and I'd be like, oh. That's a Jedi, I guess.
They took the R2-D2, and then they made the little characters that were just a bit over the top, a little bit sappy.
Yeah. So
did they run all the characters through legal? Is that what happened again? Legal got in the way?
No, they just followed a formula, and the formula they forgot is that Star Wars was disruptive.
But what Ryan's saying is the formula should be to have your characters have character.
Yeah,
it should be all personalities. Have them have one personality.
Star Wars was character driven. It wasn't. And I'm not even. By the way, I'm not a Star Wars fan like crazy. Like I'm just a cat. Like I like it. Like Back to the Future. Like it's a blockbuster to me.
Yeah, you're not even wearing a Star Wars shirt. I noticed. That's pretty.
I'm letting everyone down, I guess. But you get what I'm saying. Like if you're gonna go into the market and talk about stuff, think of what adjectives you want your customers to have, and then make your company those adjectives with your brand.
Right, and it doesn't matter what your product is, your marketing can be fun.
Yeah.
All right, so I want to fit one last thing in here if we can. It seems like the type of thing that you have, well, I'm going to try to squeeze two things in. So first, your favorite marketing channels for startup marketing specifically, and then also any specific success rituals for marketing for your day, just for success in general, checklists, anything like that that you've found, tweaks you've found to help you be successful.
Okay, so obviously I'm a big fan of using social, and I've really fallen in love with LinkedIn. I think it's my favorite place to post stuff. I've for years have made videos on YouTube that no one looks at. I've made videos on Facebook and Twitter that no one looks at. I use those platforms for remarketing, like retargeting someone that's visited my site.
Mm-hmm.
But my best success has always happened on LinkedIn. And I highly recommend, if you're not doing LinkedIn video, you should be doing a LinkedIn video once a week. If you do something on LinkedIn with your connections and then you don't post for 6 days, your connections will stop seeing your post unless another mutual connection of theirs is tagged on it. So you basically have a week. Every week you need to post something on LinkedIn. I literally had a video I made. We did a prospecting campaign here 2 weeks ago where we made an infomercial about Drift. I brought up Drift earlier, but I literally made an infomercial about Drift with the goal of them turning into a meeting for us for a prospecting meeting. And we did get the meeting with them. but we posted publicly on social. I didn't email. I didn't call. We would have just posted a video and tagged the prospect that we wanted to see.
We want to lead with this company. That's hilarious. I've joked before about if you have a really big account that you want to land, you should get a billboard in front of their office.
Yeah, saying, yeah, I've talked about that.
Tell John I'm trying to get him on the phone.
Yeah, I've talked about that too, actually. That's crazy.
That's actually a really good tip.
So, and you'll get him on the phone if you put a billboard, and how much is that lead worth for you?
What do you guys think all the Drift people did on LinkedIn after we posted that video?
I really loved it.
Oh, yeah. Shared it.
They all commented. Comment. Yeah. If here's the way LinkedIn works. If I comment on a video, all my followers will see, or all my connections will see that I like that video, and it'll come up in their feed. They basically set it up to create viral loops that are really tight. So any shares aren't worth as much as likes and comments on LinkedIn. So if I post something on LinkedIn and you, Sky, come in and comment on it, or like, let's say, Carly, you come in and you do that, if your connections will see it and you'll come in and engage with it. And I'll be in your feed constantly now as long as I post every 6 days because you've engaged with me. LinkedIn's so terrified of people, of it turning into like Twitter or Facebook or any of that stuff. So like, because of that, they're trying to really emphasize engagement with comments and likes and stuff instead of just sharing links. So don't share links. Use LinkedIn.
No, that's true. They like their comment to stay on. I mean, they like their content to stay on their platform. It's very,
yeah.
Very
so don't go sharing links, share commentary. When you get likes and engagements, prospect those people afterward, or have your sales rep that you hire do that or something. Like, use that to kind of build a cycle of people. And that's how we work here. Basically, we'll go put something out there, and then our guys here will go run in and ask people. They'll reach out to them and say, hey, I saw you like Ryan's video. Have you ever thought about using XYZ? Or we're talking about that stuff. And it's great. So I've fallen in love with LinkedIn on that end. What was the second question?
Let me see. Any success rituals?
Well, we know about the win, a win every day.
Okay.
Right?
So the win every day is huge. I will try and label and have a win every day. Another thing that I recommend is there are a lot of little tools that you can use to make your day more efficient. Think about ways you can – I'll give you an example. In my day, I use Cloud App for screenshots. I just literally will take screenshots and share them with people. It makes my day way faster. Whenever I want to share a screenshot with someone, I know that sounds stupid. It's free. You literally can download it and use it, and you can write a, you could screenshot something, then make an annotation. That saves me way more time than copying and pasting it into a program like Paint or Photoshop and having to write stuff.
There's a tool I use called Snipping Tool. It's built into Windows.
Snip it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that screenshot. You can selective parts of the screen, you can, and then you can draw on it.
Yeah, I love the Windows snippet tool is great too. Another one you can use is I use Text Expander. I don't copy and paste anything. So I have keyboard commands for everything that when I'm like, hey, here's my calendar, Sky, I literally type in semicolon calendar and it just injects the calendar link for you.
That's crazy.
I have all our web colors saved. So I literally type in colon green on my keyboard. And the second I type in colon green, it'll give me the web code number for my green, and it's easy for me to make images and stuff. Find little tools that you can use to make your day more efficient with the things that you're doing 100 times a day, the Groundhog Day type things, and mm-hmm. your life will get a lot easier. You'll find it that like you'll be able to trim out more activities in a day doing this. If you do more activities in a day, you're more likely to get more wins.
Awesome. Yeah, get two wins by saving some
time.
Okay, I have one last thing. So we did, okay, got yours in. I have one last thing. So,
okay,
Ryan, I want you to tell us a, could be funny, could be not, but tell us a story that probably most startups would have reality with of something that you messed up on that.
Oh, this is good. I have a really good one. Okay. So, a couple years ago before LeadIQ, I got a job at a VC firm called Flagship Ventures, and they had me help them with a startup that they had acquired called WhoQuest. And it was basically they're trying to build something that was like LinkedIn endorsements. I was helping them with building a viral loop system, basically where if you go on their site, you can endorse people. And if they got endorsed, we would match them up to an API and then email that person and let them know that they got endorsed on the site. And if they want to remove it, they can remove it. If they want to join, they can join. To see the endorsement they got endorsed on, they had to join to see it. A little viral loop we did to get a lot of users. Worked really cool. I built a page that explained everything to them. When the page came through and it got sent, I had on the page in big letters, "We will spam you," when they signed up. And I meant to put, "We won't spam you."
So just and a tiny typo.
I fat fingered it and wrote, I wrote to, we were using a designer guy at the time, and I wrote, "We will spam you." And the guy clearly, like, English was a second language or something, because he didn't know what it meant. Put it on the landing page, and it went out to, like,
no.
We had like 85,000 people that visited the page and saw.
No. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
But how many of them said you'll spam me? Okay, and went ahead and signed up anyway.
Yeah, we actually still converted. I'm not kidding. People converted, but the way I found out was like.
Well, at least you know what? Full disclosure. At least they know. Okay, they're going
to. You know what was cool? I emailed the hell out of those people. No, I'm just kidding.
They said they'd do it.
I just wanted to make it clear that, like, we weren't going to go and, like, email. Anyway, it's just really silly. That's a classic startup fail. I tell my friends that here all the time. They laugh about classic. It. It's really funny.
Yeah, one of the things we say here is we try to just stay away from that word altogether. Even if you say, hey, we're not going to spam you, we swear we're not going to spam you. Don't worry, we won't spam you. All people hear is spam, 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 spam.
You know what I noticed too? If you have a landing page and you say that, it makes people think about it. So don't even put it on there.
Yeah. Yep.
True.
Don't mention it. Don't mention any.
Yeah. Don't think of pink elephants and then you think of a pink elephant. If you mentioned we will spam you. Oh crap. If I sign up, I'm going to get an email spam. I don't know.
Oh, Ryan, this has been great. Yeah. Yeah. It's been fantastic. I want to mention again, your site and your podcast, the Prospecting Podcast. Everybody check that out. Subscribe. Give them a good rating. All the same fantastic stuff you do for us here on the If You Market podcast. And also Ryan's company, Lead IQ. Check them out. Ryan, you want to throw out a quick kind of what Lead IQ does and what people can expect there?
Yeah. So if you are someone that works in sales or you run a company that gets pitched a lot, you probably hate getting pitched to people that don't personalize their prospecting. What we've trying to do is we're trying to solve a problem where we help people with research first prospecting by building software that makes it easy for you to do research on the sites that you're on and get contact information in one click. So if you want to go to a prospect's profile online or you want to go to their company blog, you can open up our extension, hit one button. We'll get all their contact information for you. We'll send that stuff into Salesforce. Kind of try and make it a lot easier for you so you can just focus on writing a really good gold email. Like something that people will be like, holy crap, give this person an Oscar.
so take all the time they save by getting that stuff from you and put it into better email content.
That's our goal. That's honestly why we're here.
There's a trial that they can try out for and
you can go to the site and get 100 free leads, or you can email me, ryan@leadiq.com, and I'll give you the old 1-2 God mode account and you can get a little bit more. That's my little exclusive for your listeners for being cool.
The BABA up, right, left, right.
Yeah, yeah, Konami Co. Up there, up down, left, right. Unlimited lives at Contra.
That's great. And then I'm sure anybody can find Ryan very easily on LinkedIn. Sounds like you're very active there. So check Ryan out on LinkedIn. And I want to thank everybody for listening on behalf of the If You Market podcast and myself and Carla Jo Helms and Ryan O'Hara of Lead IQ. Remember, if you market the shit out of it, they will come.
Believe. All right, see you guys.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks.